Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Ernest, what's up? Look, today I want to talk to you about something that's been on my mind, a real weight on my shoulders. You know, we all have these moments, big or small, that just stick with us. When we don't talk about these things, then they can start to affect our lives in unexpected ways. That's why having a space to express these feelings is so important. I know firsthand the benefits of therapy. It's been transformative for my friends and family. Therapy can help you learn crucial skills like setting boundaries and developing coping strategies. It's not just about dealing with major events. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life, allowing you to become the best version of yourself. So if you've been thinking about therapy, BetterHelp can be a great option for you. It's entirely online, which makes it super convenient and adaptable to your busy schedule. You start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can even switch therapists at any time if you feel the need without any additional cost. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/earnyourleisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/earnyourleisure. Don't wait, don't hesitate, head over there now.
So now we're going to go into what you guys actually are on TV for, as far as, you know, fixing up homes and flipping homes in Chicago, specifically in Southside Chicago, right? That's the area you focus on?
Southside.
All right, So what's the real estate opportunities? Because in Chicago, we're in Chicago, so I think it's important to talk about, highlight that. Before we start anything, what's Chicago real estate look like, and what's the real estate opportunities in Chicago?
There are a lot of opportunities in Chicago. Man, we have one of the hottest markets in the country. Right. The question is, you know, it's just how are you starting? I mean, if you do have your credit and your money saved up, you know what I'm saying? As a first-time home buyer, there's an enormous amount of opportunities, and we advise people that are starting off to go for cash flow. Go get that 3 or 4 unit property, or go get a 203K renovation loan or some kind of Fannie Mae construction loan so that you can get a properties below market value, because there's thousands of properties. I'm not talking about hundreds of properties. There's thousands of properties in the Chicagoland area that you can get below market value and renovate, and then turn that into a cash flowing property, or
a property that you live in for a couple of years. You know, people talking about house hacking now. Mm-hmm. You know, live in for a couple of years and then, you know, sell it after 2 years. And now you got this check and now you got capital to start a business or get another property or do multiple things.
So when you say below market value, like, what are we talking about as far as numbers? Like, some what's an example of, like, a home that you just recently flipped or something that you could, like, expect, like, okay, this is something that is typical.
Man, tell them about the one, the Bronzeville house.
You want to talk about Bronzeville?
Yeah.
You said the last property.
No, it doesn't have to be the last one. It could be what anyone.
Okay, well, yeah. All right. I do use this example a lot. So, yeah. So I got a 3,000 square foot graystone single family home.
Graystone? What is that?
Like a brownstone?
Okay, brownstone. Okay.
Graystone.
Okay.
Because they're gray.
All right.
Right. So I got a 3,000 square foot graystone in Bronzeville, which is a neighborhood on the south side. Got that for $200,000. Got it below market value because the recession was going on and the guy was trying to sell it because he was in pre-foreclosure. So got it for $200,000. And I'd use a 203K renovation loan for that property. So that allowed me to have the money to purchase the property for $200,000. And I also rolled in $30,000 in renovation. Now, this property didn't require a gut rehab. I mean, $30,000, I did a couple of the bathrooms, redid the porch and the kitchen. And that's what I initially did. Made all of those things look brand new.
Didn't touch any of the drywall throughout the house. None of that type of stuff.
This is not a fixer-upper.
So this, this was just updating kitchens. A great opportunity.
And you only put 3% down. 3.5%.
3.5%. Okay. So I came to that closing with $7,700. So $7,700. And the reason why is because I couldn't negotiate because it was the bank and it was a foreclosure.
I want that to go with people's heads. Because we talked about 203K loan actually with Jay Morrison, but we didn't go through a real world example. So this is good. Mm-hmm. So you got a $200,000 property and then you had $30,000 for renovation costs.
Right.
So it's $230,000
was the full loan.
The 203K loan allows you to put 3 to 3.5% down,
right.
But the 30K gets wrapped into the mortgage.
Right.
So 3% of 230 is like $7,000.
No, seven five or something like that.
So you got the renovation and the home for not including closing costs, but out. $7,000 is how much the down payment was.
Right.
Then with closing costs, how much was it with closing costs?
I mean, I came to closing total all in for $7,700.
How?
Did you roll that into the mortgage?
Yeah, because it was all rolled in.
Okay, you rolled it into
the mortgage. So, all right. That's good to know.
Actually, rolled in three of the first month's payments into the loan also. So I didn't have to make my first payment until I was actually moving into the property, which was 90 days later.
That's because you were updating the bathrooms.
Right, all the updates and the renovations.
Okay. Okay, I'm sorry, I cut you off. So, all right. So now speed it up. So, all right, you got the property for $7,700. Right. Now you have it. Now what?
Now I have it. Renovation needed to start just about immediately. Mm-hmm. So in that process, I had already got three different contractors to give scope of work so that I can decide which one I wanted to work with as far as, just completing the work and how much the materials would cost and things like that.
And you make the contractors very honest when they know that they're one of three and they're competing.
What was that process like dealing with contractors? Because a lot of times people go into these deals and they say that's the toughest part is dealing with contractors. Mm-hmm.
We always push doing these 203K renovation loans because when you do a renovation loan, there is an inspector who comes behind the contractors on each draw or phase of the project. Mm-hmm. The money comes each draw. Let's say $30,000, you get $10,000 three times.
Mm-hmm.
The money comes to the homeowner, that $10,000, to pay the contractor. The contractor for the first draw has to do that $10,000 worth of work out of his own pocket.
Okay.
The contractor has to put his own money up.
Okay.
And has an inspector who comes to make sure that he's done the work up to code before the money is released to the homeowner to give to them for the next phase. So they don't make their profit until they finish all of the work because they had to go to do the first phase out of pocket. So now the homeowner is protected. So now there's no contractor getting over on you
or trying to convince you that the work is good enough.
Yeah. Quick question now, because I'm thinking like you guys are firefighters, and obviously you guys must know code, right? Did your experience as being firefighters help you during that process?
Yes, because I mean, as firefighters too, I mean, we learn about building construction, and we see a whole lot because we, in the process of being a firefighter, you see houses that are like burned down and destroyed. So you see everything.
And we tear out a lot of walls and ceilings and things like that. So we're kind of on the other side of it.
Yeah. And then we also work with a lot of firefighters that happen to be in the trades. So we, you know, you learn a lot through that process also. So, I mean, the thing is, it removed all the fear because you actually had this inspector who comes and makes sure that the work is done complete.
Right. So, all right. So, okay. So now you started the bringing the contractors in. Mm-hmm. What's the next steps after that? Like, how long did it take to fully renovate it? When were you able to get tenants in? Like, what's the deal?
Well, this was a single family home, so I didn't have to deal with tenants. But I had 90 days to get the work done, and actually it got done in a shorter period than that. I think we were done in 65, 70 days or whatever. So by the time I had to make my first payment, mortgage payment, I was able to move my furniture in and start living.
You was living there?
Yeah, I lived there.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long did you live there?
I was there for about 3.5 years. My intention was to be there for 2 years because I knew that after 2 years I would be able to sell the property, no capital gains, and also I knew that my credit would go back up because I did a short sale. See, we didn't include that. The condo that I had, I did a short sale on that. After 2 years, my credit went back up, and it coincided with my ability to sell this property with no capital gains. Now, I was enjoying myself so much that I actually ended up staying for a little bit longer than I anticipated.
Man, we had so many poetry sets. Toga parties and
so you guys were both living in
boils.
You guys are both living in the property.
So can you talk about that capital gains? You said that 2 years you allowed you not to pay capital gains.
Right. So you had to be there 24 months. That's the rule.
What is capital gains?
Capital gains is the profit that you make on a property, the difference between how much you pay for it and how much you actually sold the property for. So the profit is the capital gain. And so the tax on the capital gain happens on properties that are not your primary residence or you haven't lived in as your primary residence for at least 24 months. So that's why I knew I needed to be there for at least 24 months in order to be able to collect those capital gains, which in this instance was $80,000 cash, and then be able to then have the capital to move on to buy a multi-unit property and then start flipping homes and then partnering with my brother to really, start to do more than we had ever anticipated.
So if you don't live in a property for more than a year and you sell it, but you use the proceeds to buy another home, do you still have to pay capital gains?
You can do what they call a
1035?
Yeah, 1030 exchange.
The exchange. Right. Yeah, he knew it.
You already knew what you wanted to do.
Well,
there's different ways to slice it. Yeah, you can do that.
I answered my own question. All right. So, okay.
Whole time that he was doing that, mind you, I'm also buying multi-unit buildings while he's doing that.
Right.
So by the time he sold that property 3.5 years later, I already had 2 3-unit buildings
that are cash flowing. And so it's like the two of us are like one person, right? Because I'm implying one strategy.
And when his condo went from worth of 150 to being upside down to 30,000, I looked at that. I was like, I ain't never buying a condo. In fact, I ain't buying a house neither. You know, I'm going straight for the multi-unit apartment buildings.
Thanks for making that mistake, bro.
Thanks. Somebody has to jump out there first. Bus open. But the thing is, what we did learn, though, is we learned about the power of cash flow, and we learned about the power of buying properties below market value and being able to get that cash and that leverage for us to then be able to go. Now I got this lump sum of money, and now it's like, okay, now let's buy another multi-unit property for cash flow. Now let's go, we went hard money, did a flip that way. And then from there, now the wheels are turning. And now you got the next deal and the next deal, more confidence, more confidence.
Right.
Things go wrong, and those, when you get burned, when you touch that stove, you don't ever touch it again. Mm-hmm. So, different things that we learned about how we deal with contracts and stuff like that, everything didn't just, shoot perfectly, but it still was, enabled us to make it to the point where we ended up on TV.
How much did you sell that property for?
I ended up selling that property for $315,000. You want to give the exact $316,500 or whatever it was, but yeah.
So in 2 years, you held it for 2 years?
Three.
It's not bad. So it's $116,000 profit that you made for 3 years, and you got it for $7,700. How much was your monthly mortgage?
My monthly mortgage was I think it was like $1,400.
That's powerful. Really powerful because, especially in New York, we're paying rent for $1,900, $2,100,
$2,200
a month.
Where's that at?
And it's like,
right.
What?
That 2021? It's way.
One bedroom.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Not 3,000 square feet.
No
way.
Maybe so you're saying it wasn't 3 bedrooms and 4 bathrooms?
No. Maybe 900 square feet.
No, man. 700 square feet. One bedroom, one bathroom.
That's rough, man.
Welcome and you got to pay for parking. Yeah. So you got a property for $7,000 paying under $2,000 a month, and you held it for a couple years and made $100,000 profit. I say that to say a lot of times people don't fully understand how attainable buying a home really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can, it's different programs and there's different ways. You have to educate yourself. That's one of the reasons of the podcast. But it's not as far-fetched as it may seem.
Yeah. No, it's not.
I think people live in fear, right? Because they've never seen it. Like I said earlier, it's like we're first generation. So like we don't know what we don't know. Like people don't know that these opportunities are out there.